Carlin?
It was a reading from, it's just from a history book. I can tell you, it's not OA approved. So good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
So we are on step three. So that the chapter How It Works is steps three and four. So that's what we're going to work on this morning. So I'm going to actually start on page 60 because everyone, I think, knows how it works the first couple pages. And step three really begins on page 60. So we have where the A, B, and C is, where it summarizes step one is that we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives, once again, drunk or sober, and that probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. So you see, it's not even saying anything about God. Are we convinced that no human power could relieve our compulsive overeating? And that's the default of needing a higher power. And that step in the C is God could and would if he were sought. You know, for me, someone confronted me with that old, you know, shortcut of, you know, three steps or I can't, God can't, I think I'll let God. And how arrogant that was. That I was so powerful, I was going to let God do something. And what step three is, God could and would if he were sought. So step three is the decision to seek that power. Because my old idea of step three was to call my sponsor, commit my food, and say the serenity prayer every time I wanted to eat. And also what I would do is I would treat God like Santa Claus. And I would give God the laundry list of things I would really like. And if I was a good little girl, then he would grant my wishes. And if I wasn't a good little girl, he was going to put coal in my stocking. And step three is simply a decision to go through with the rest of the work so that we learn how to turn our life and our will over to God. We don't know how to do that at step three. What we're saying is we're committed to learn how to do that. And how we do that is we learn the skill set in 4 through 9, and we implement it in 10 and 11. Okay, so on page 60, it says, being convinced we are at step three, which is that we decided to turn our will and our life over to God as we understood him. Just what do we mean by that, and just what do we have to do? So these next couple pages are going to tell us what it means to turn our life and our will, and what we have to do to be able to do that. So this is the first requirement. It's a requirement again. Is that we be convinced that any life run on self-will can hardly be a success. On that basis, we are almost always in collision with something or somebody, even though our motives were good. I don't know about you, but I thought, well, I have the best of intentions. I want my brothers to be happy. And the fact that I'm railroading them because I'm the oldest, that doesn't matter. I wanted the world to judge me by my intention and not my actions. So I have to look at it. Self-will run riot. And it says most people live by self-propulsion. And that's true. You know, most people who are successful, you know, the Mark Zuckerbergs and most politicians and Oprah Winfrey and all these successful people, they live by self-propulsion. What I have to know is as a compulsive overeater, I cannot do that. There are consequences if I live by self-propulsion. If I live by self-propulsion, I'm going to eat and I'm going to die. So living by self-propulsion is not unique to compulsive overeaters, but our consequences of doing that is unique. Each person is like an actor who wants to run the whole show. He is forever trying to arrange the ballet, the scenery, the rest of the plays on his own. If only his arrangements would stay put, if only people would do as he wished, the show would be great. Everybody, including himself, would be pleased. Life would be wonderful. In trying to make these arrangements, he may be kind, considerate, patient, generous, even modest or self-sacrificing. On the other hand, he may be mean, egotistical, selfish, and dishonest, but as with most humans, he is more likely to have varied traits. So I had to look at, is that what I was doing? Was I constantly trying to rearrange the show? And I was convinced that, you know, my brothers would be happier if they only listened to me. My friends would be happier if they only listened to me. You know, I'm someone who loves politics. I believe if everyone had the same political leanings I would, America would be great. And I'm going to, you know, force that on everybody. And I think it says, in trying to make these arrangements, your actor may seem quite virtuous. And this is just my opinion again, but I think, you know, we're dominantly women in Overeaters Anonymous, and we are socialized to take care of other people and to put our families first and our husbands first and our children first and all that. However, I had to look at that. Was I really being virtuous, or was I really just being manipulative? You know, was it really just I was always, you know, saying to someone, you know, Stacy, can I help you? But what I was really saying was, Stacy, can I manipulate you so that I feel comfortable? You know, can I be nice to you so that you can tell Susan what a nice person I am? Or maybe you can just be nice because I want to enjoy a certain reputation even though I don't deserve it. So my being nice was not really being nice. It was just I was so uncomfortable and scared that I was manipulating people, and I was just using it, doing it in a nice way. So it doesn't, it's no different if I am, you know, I like to say it, if I'm Debbie Doormat or if I'm Betty Bulldozer. It's the same exact thing. So it says, when we live this way by self-will, what usually happens? The show doesn't come off very well. He begins to think life doesn't treat him right. He decides to exert himself more. He becomes, on the next occasion, still more demanding or gracious, in the case may be. Still, the play doesn't suit him. Admitting he may be somewhat at fault, he is sure that other people are more to blame. He becomes angry, indignant, and self-pitying. I don't know about you, but if I did one nasty thing and you did 10 nasty things, I was totally innocent. If I did 9 nasty things and you did 10 nasty things, I was totally innocent. So I had to look at how I showed up in the world. And it was true. If being nice to you didn't work, then being nicer would work better. If being nasty didn't work, I would be nastier and that would work better. And we have to ask ourselves, how is that working for us? So the next couple, what I'm going to do once again is put it in first person, these questions. And just to do a little sneak peek, this is a couple pages is about what my life is like when I'm run on self-will. So part of my step 11 practice is often taking these sentences and seeing, do I identify in more with the this statement or with working in God's will? Because the more I identify with self, the more in trouble I am. So it says, what is my basic trouble? We're on page 61, that first full paragraph. Am I not a self-seeker even when trying to be kind? There's your people pleaser. Am I not the victim of the delusion that I can wrest satisfaction and happiness out of this world if only I manage well? Man, that one's the one I spent a lot of time on. I can get, and I use that word world and I'll change it. I'll say, am I not the victim of the delusion I can wrest satisfaction and happiness out of my mother if only I manage well? Out of my boss if only I manage well? Out of my dogs? Like, I'm going to change dogs. It just sounds so crazy. They're dogs. They're going to act like dogs. And why is it? Because, like, do I want the dogs to be better? No, I'm afraid of what you think of me as an owner. What if they act up? I'm going to look like an idiot. So my idea is I need to manage better. And that's the exact opposite of what spirituality tells us. Is it not evident to the rest of the players that these are the things he wants? I mean, I thought that with my brothers. I know I'm bullying you, but don't you know this is what you want? And do not my actions make each of them wish to retaliate, snatching all they can get out of the show? So is it really that people are difficult, or are they reacting to me? I don't really know if you have, but I've had people in my family who I think are nasty, and people have told me, you know, they're only like that when you're around. What do you mean? And here's the one that hits my heart. Am I not, even in my best moments, a producer of confusion rather than harmony? So I'm on my A game. I got 20 balls in the air. Everything's going good. And the best that comes out of it is confusion. So to me, confusion is of Kim. Harmony is of God. You know, we often hear, you know, I got to find balance in my life. Balance is, to me now, sounds an awful lot like managing my own life. I'm making decisions based on self about what is going to make me happy. What I shoot for now is not balance, but harmony. And when I'm in harmony with my higher power, things just seem to work out better. Okay? So let's skip over to 62, because now we're going to see what the root of our trouble is. First full paragraph on 62. Selfishness and self-centeredness. This, we think, is the root of our trouble. Driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, self-pity, we step on the toes of our fellows and they retaliate. So I love the word root, and someone pointed out to me recently that Bill uses a lot of tree analogies. I never noticed it. So the root is underneath. We can't see it. So that's why it's so difficult to see. And how do we dig out those roots? By doing the actions of 4 through 9. And we can really see how selfish and self-centered we are. Once again, it was hard for me, and this is just my opinion, that we as women are often socialized to not be quote-unquote selfish. And I heard a speaker say it would hit my heart. What about thinking as being self-absorbed? Out of a 24-hour day, I'm thinking of myself for 23 of those hours. And the only hour I'm not thinking of me, I'm thinking, what are you thinking of me? So that's the problem. I can't get outside of self. And that's why I'm so miserable. And it says, driven by 100 forms of fear. I have a little Jack Russell at home, and we can be sitting in my backyard, la 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 la, and she sees a squirrel, and boom, nothing else exists. 20 pounds, throwing herself against the fence and the trees because she's got to get that squirrel. That's what I'm like when I'm driven by fear, self-pity, self-seeking, self-interest. Nothing else matters. I am driven by that. So let's go down to the next paragraph because I've got some really good news for you. Best news you're going to hear all morning. So our troubles, we think, are basically of our own making. Because if my trouble really is, I'm not married, but if it really is your husband or your children or your boss or your family, what are you going to do with that? You can't change other people. But if my basic trouble is of my own making, if I have the ability to change how I react to life, then I can experience peace. So that is the best news. No one else in my life needs to change in order for me to experience peace. This is, they arise out of ourselves, and the alcoholic is an extreme example of self-will when riot. Well, he usually doesn't think so. I know when I first came into OA, I would sit in that room dying, and I could tell you all exactly what you needed to do. Because I can tell that. I can tell you guys are acting out. I couldn't look at my own life the same way. So I had to understand that I was self-will run riot. Above everything, so this kind of sounds important, people. Above everything, we alcoholics must be rid of selfishness. We must, or it kills us. Not that it makes us miserable. Not that it's going to be annoying, but it's going to kill us. God makes that possible. And there often seems no way of entirely getting rid of self without his aid. Many of us had moral and philosophical convictions galore, but we could not live up to them, even though we would have liked to. So that reckons back to that we talked about yesterday with moral and philosophical convictions galore. Is I grew up in a family that was really, you know, both my parents, they've been married for over 50 years. I am one of 3 kids. We were all loved. I grew up in a, you know, in Catholic school, so it wasn't really me, you know, we were well off. I grew up with, you know, priests and nuns who were examples of what it was like to be good. I couldn't do it. I had an inability. I would lie when the truth would do better. You know, I was always thinking how I can get around the system. Neither could we reduce our self-centeredness by wishing or trying on our own power. We had to have God's help. This is the how and why, but first of all, we had to quit playing God. That's tough. That's my task every day. How am I playing God, and how can I quit doing that? You know, me thinking that I can tell my brothers what to do is playing God. Me judging people by how they work their OA program is playing God. You know, I believe in this big book method entirely, but I know that God is not limited to the first 164 pages. It's the way that I found freedom, but there's other ways. The only thing I can share is what worked for me, but other people are going to find different ways to find a relationship with a power. So what I have to do is stop trying to control other people. Next, we decided in the hereafter, in this drama of life, God is going to be our director. He is the principal. We are his agents. He is the father. We are his children. Most good ideas are simple, and this concept was the keystone to the new and triumphant arch through which we pass to freedom. So, which we pass to freedom, not to sobriety, not to abstinence. You know, to me, I love school, and when I studied for a test, I studied to get 100. I knew I wouldn't get it. That's what I studied for. I didn't study to get a 60%. And yet so many of us will do that in 12-step programs is we think, well, I'm just going to work on being sober. That's like studying for to get a 30% on your test. I want freedom. That's what I want. I want freedom. So I'm going to have to resign as the supreme ruler of the universe. You know, and whatever analogy works for you, you know, a lot of people don't have good relationships with their parents. So that father and child thing freaks them out. So whatever it means to you, I personally like teacher and student because I love school. You know, and I have to recognize that I am the student and God is the teacher. So whatever that means to you, that's the relationship you have. So on the top of page 63, and this is something that I have changed. I was originally taught this was a third step promises. But I told you yesterday, I did the OA waltz for many years, steps 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3. I never experienced these promises. To me, this is the carrot that they're putting out there. These are the promises of the 12 steps. And they're letting us know, if we make this decision and we continue with the 12 steps, this is what we're going to get. So when we sincerely took such a position, what is that position? The position is, he is the father, we are his child. He is the principal, we are his agent. All sorts of remarkable things followed. We had a new employer. Being all powerful, he provided what we needed if we kept close to him and performed his work well. I love the word if. I circle that in my big book all the time because if is a condition. So God is going to provide what we need if we keep close to him. So I have to ask myself on a daily basis, what am I doing to stay close to that power, whatever that is for you? And am I performing his work well? Meaning, am I taking actions? Am I just giving lip service to the 12 steps, or am I practicing the 12 steps on a daily basis? Established on such a footing, we become less and less interested in ourselves, so we're weaned away from that self-absorption. Our little plans and designs. So one of my practices in the morning is I, like I said, I have dogs, and if I got up and turned the light on to do the readings for step 11, my dogs would have to go to the bathroom, I'd have to get up, walk to the back of the house, and I'd have to go to the bathroom, and then I would never do the work. And when it says on awakening, I believe it's on awakening. Because I don't know about you, but my mind wakes up about 20 minutes before I do. It's racing. So what I did is I actually recorded myself reading those pages on my iPad. And I just hit the play button, and since it's my voice, my dog's little heads go up, and they cuddle in. And it takes 2 minutes and 13 seconds, because it's timed on my iPad. And then I say the third step prayer, the seventh step prayer, let my dogs out. And in the shower, I have my little plans and designs, my to-do list, everything that I want to get done. And as I get out of the shower, I say, God, help me to live a life of invitation. And what that means is my little plans and designs are on the back burner, and whatever you present before me is what my priority is going to be today. So my little plans and designs are becoming less and less important. More and more, we become interested in seeing what we can contribute to life. You know, I was confronted again by somebody that, you know, going to OA for 17 years, it was always about what OA could give to me. I need to get to a meeting because I need relief. Gimme, 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 gimme. Now I come to meetings as a recovered woman saying, who's hurting? Who can I help? That should be the switch that we go to once we go through these steps, is how can I help someone else find freedom? As we felt a new power flow in, as we enjoyed peace of mind, as we discovered we could face life successfully, as we become conscious of his contact, we begin to lose our fear of today, tomorrow, or the hereafter. We were reborn. And of course, we're not going to be reborn, you know, in physical. But our old life must die in order for this new life to start. So in step one is the death of the food. We have to be abstinent to work these steps. We can't be drunk. The food must die. It's a grieving process for many of us. In step three is the death of the self. Our old self must die. And then when that dies, we can become reborn. So next is the third step prayer. So really the third step is the pages we just went over. The third step prayer is just a confirmation of what we learned, whereas I thought the third step prayer was my third step. And it does say here, you know, that the wording is quite optional. So people will rewrite this so it feels comfortable to them. So I'm going to read it the way, and I'll tell you what it means to me. But once again, if you don't have a higher power, if that word God torques you, use something else. So it says, God, I offer myself to thee to build with me and do with me as thou wilt. And that word offer is huge to me because I didn't offer anything. Offer means no strings attached. I would barter. You do this and I'll do that. You do this and I'll do that. So am I willing to offer myself? Now, what I thought too, my old idea is step three is when you turned over the food. Once again, we're abstinent at this point. Food is down. God doesn't want my food. God wants me. So am I willing to offer him everything? That's just a consideration. What are you not willing to offer? I'll give God everything but my marriage. Everything but my children. Everything but my money. And those places that you're holding out, offering to your higher power, is exactly where that mental twist is going to come in and convince you to eat. And it says, to build with me and to do with me as thou wilt. And I always think of my dad as a Marine. And he talks about, boot camp. You don't walk into boot camp at the beginning of that 11 weeks and they teach you how to be a Marine. They tear the civilian out of you. And once you have no identity, they then build you up into the few and the proud. So think about it. We're on page 63 now. Between the doctor's opinion and all these pages before, we've had 70-something pages of being torn down, that we in and of ourselves are nothing. And now that we accept that, God is going to build us up into the person that we were always meant to be. To me, it's a returning to who I really was. I'm going to learn how to be more Kim every single day. Does that make sense? So it says, relieve me of the bondage of self that I may better do thy will. Once again, I used to say, relieve me of the bondage of food. You know, that in and of itself is done through abstinence. I need to be relieved of me. Being me sucks. It's painful to be me. It's painful to live in this skin where I'm so frightened all the time because I'm driven by all these fears. So I need to be relieved of me. And the best way I can be relieved of me is to think of you. So that's what I'm asking God to do. Relieve me of the bondage of me. And that way I can better do his will because now I can focus on other people. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. So don't take away my difficulties so that my life is a little bit easier. Take away my difficulties because I'm going to show other people how they can also find the solution. You know, when I take a fifth step and someone has a horrific, horrific childhood, I get excited because they're going to be able to help people I can't help. And not that they're going to be able to help with their traumas, because our traumas are irrelevant to being a compulsive overeater. If it was about trauma, I wouldn't be a compulsive overeater. If it was about trauma, then every person who was raped would be a compulsive overeater, and that's not true. But someone who is raped can tell someone else and say, listen, I was raped, but I was able, through these steps, to find freedom. I had a parent that beat me, and through these steps, I found freedom. That's what we can do. We can witness that regardless of what our circumstances are, that each and every one of us have access to work these 12 steps and find freedom from our life. May I do thy will always. The thought we thought well before taking the step, making sure we were ready and that we could at last abandon ourselves utterly to him. I know that's not part of the prayer, but I ask myself almost on a daily basis, am I willing to abandon myself utterly to him? I have to tell you, I'm not able to. That's why I have to continue to work the steps. You know, I still want to control what's going on in my office, or I want to get that guy, or I want to, you know, have that new house, or that, you know, fit in that size pair of jeans. But that's my goal. I want to utterly abandon myself to him. So at this point, does everyone want to kind of say the third step prayer with me? You think you guys are ready to abandon yourselves utterly to him?
Yes, yes, yes.
Okay. Okay, let's all say this together then. God, I offer myself to thee, to build with me and to do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that the victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of thy power, thy love, thy great life. May I do thy will always. So I kind of look at the big book this way. It's basically a series of prayers, actions, promises, and warnings. So if we think of it that way, for each step, we do the prayers, the actions, make sure that we're using the promises as a gauge of whether we've completed that step, and we heed the warnings, we're all going to recover. So we're going to talk about one of the warnings next. So at the bottom of page 63, it says, next, we launched on a course of vigorous action, the first step of which is a personal house cleaning, which many of us had never attempted. Though our decision was a vital and crucial step, it could have little permanent effect unless at once followed by a strenuous effort to face and be rid of the things in ourselves which had been blocking us. Our liquor was but a symptom. We had to get down to causes and conditions. So I often hear people say, well, I can't do a fourth step, so I've been 6 months abstinent or a year abstinent. When is the big book telling us to do the fourth step? It's giving us two time periods. Next, at once. As soon as we do our step three, we immediately go into step four. Because that decision, although it's a vital and crucial step, it could have little permanent effect. And my experience has shown me that. I can get relief in step three, but it has little permanent effect unless I go through with the rest of the steps. So I use this simple experience from my own life. For 5 years, I made a decision to go back to graduate school. Never went back to graduate school. It wasn't until I made the decision and took the actions, kind of researched what, you know, universities actually offered the classes I wanted to take, found out I had to take the GREs, studied for them, applied, got accepted. And did getting accepted to graduate school give me a credit, give me a degree?
Nope.
I actually had to take the classes. And I had to continue to take the classes semester after semester. I couldn't take a semester and say, okay, I'm done. And also, too, a master's degree is 60 credits. I couldn't randomly take 60 credits and say, okay, give me a graduate degree. They had requirements. And until I could take 100 credits, and if 100 of those credits did not fulfill those 60 credit requirements, I still wouldn't have my degree. So that's the warning here. Step three is a vital and crucial step, but if we do not go forward, we are not going to experience the promises here. So we are just at 10 o'clock right now, and I'm done with step three. I'm going to give you guys two options. We can take a 10-minute break and start on step four, or we could go through with the resentments and then take a break. Does anyone have any preferences?
Break.
Okay. All right, so we will meet back here at 10:05. Thank you.